The new ABC series 30-something is about a couple of baby boomers who now have their own baby and are reaching for their version of the American dream. Our critic at large, Laurie Stone, says it's about time they woke up.
Yups who are used to better made good should pass up 30-something, a Stephen Bochco knockoff. Like Hill Street Blues and L.A. Law, 30-something has a large cast and running subplots, and issues raised in one segment don't have to be resolved at its conclusion. But on this show, instead of feeling characters within a developing story, we get bundles of attitude. Husband Michael opens the door and shouts, "June, I'm home." "In here, Ward," his wife Hope calls from the living room. How 80s, making with the references to 50s TV. But Michael is nothing but references. Inside him are only images and impressions, and he flashes before us, representing a human being the way a chicken McNugget represents poultry. Throughout the show, unearned epiphanies are offered in lieu of plot. One tiny scene builds to a laugh, another to tears, or there's a fight, a confession, a parting. Emotion is administered like a bolt of current or a tab of medication, and if you respond, you feel zapped or medicated. 30-something's message is as chintzy as its format. Happily married Michael and Hope are supposed to be two choices among an array of options for the shopping generation. The other types include Elliot and Nancy, a settled married couple, Ellen, a single exec sans personal life, Melissa, a waning sex goddess, and Gary, a long-haired Peter Pan. All are as ersatz as Hope and Michael, but for a while it seems they'll at least get equal time. As it turns out, they merely superimpose a picture of diversity over conformity and spray the scent of ambivalence through safe, satisfied air. The focus remains on the happy couple. The others pop into view just to show how much they yearn for Hope in Michael's life. Hope has quit her job to stay with her child, and she's presented as brave for resisting her friend Ellen's exhortations to return to work. Michael likes this arrangement more than his integrity. To support his family, he courageously acquiesces to a client and concocts a shabby advertising campaign. You might think all this heroism would wear them out, but in the first episode, they endure yet another trial. Their friends, the arrested cases, want them to go camping, to hire a babysitter and have fun. Michael tries to accommodate by having a fantasy about sex in the woods. Hope interviews a parade of babysitters, but in the end they stay home, in the suburbs, because they don't really want to leave. Michael and Hope radiate anxiety. "We're so lucky," they keep repeating, without stating their fear. They're surrounded by panic. It shoots from the eyes of their single friends, fueling a mantra in the couple, unspoken but discernible in all their rationales. If we can just get clean enough, straight enough, simple enough, if we can just forget about adventure, exoticism, and risk, if we can just escape the city and its denizens, the poor, the druggy, the freaky, all those who remind us of our ambivalence and nasty cravings, then we'll be safe for life. The show's milieu is white, moneyed, heterosexual, and IV drug-free. These characters have to know about condoms and minoxidil 9. And still they utter the words family, marriage, commitment, and home, as if casting spells, as if praying. They've succumbed to that spreading secondary infection, the one that gives people license to cave into their terrors about aloneness and death, deviance and otherness, and imagine its fear of AIDS.
Laurie Stone is a New York-based writer and critic and is a contributor to The Village